loose his tongue and give him a clear, insightful vision of what you want him to say. In your son's name. Amen.
Amen. It's dangerous when you pray to loose my tongue. Loose, but not too loose, right? Welcome to church. How are you guys? Yeah? Everybody good? It's been quite a week. I actually slept a little bit better last night, so that's good. It wasn't a long sleep, but I woke up refreshed, so that's helpful. But I've just been exhausted this week with life. And it's kind of funny, just kind of getting even in the routine of doing the sermons, I figure, I'm starting to kind of get a little bit of a pattern or whatever. But the problem with the pattern is it seems to start with a crisis. Yeah, so somewhere in there, there's some sort of a speed bump or whatever. And then, yeah, working through that's been pretty awesome. So, but it's hard in some ways because I feel exhausted. I feel like there's just like, I can't do this forever. Like it doesn't feel sustainable in so many ways. And yet, when I take account and look at all of the pieces, nobody's dead. This is real wood. I can knock it. I don't want to knock on that one. But nobody's maimed. Nobody's, you know, the real things. There's so many people that are struggling with deep things. And, you know, I don't want to minimize anybody who's just feels, you know, that little saying, first world problems or whatever. You know, like I don't like the saying as much. But the idea is that our problems sometimes aren't in compared to, you know, we have extra pair of shoes. We take shower in drinking water. There's this great commercial that was on one of the videos that I've been watching where, you know, this, I think it's Matt Damon's doing the commercial, and he's making dinner, and he gets water and this and the cook and all this other kind of stuff. And side by side is the time that it took for a lady to go walk however many miles, get water, and bring it back so she could begin the task of whatever it is that he was doing. Right? So it was just like this, you know, like a 45-minute walk for her to go get a water or something, and he was done with his deal. So some of my problems aren't tragic. Most of them aren't tragic, but that doesn't mean it's not something that we deal with and that we work through. And I know that some of you guys, I know we prayed for, I was thinking about Kathy and just, you know, just the earthquake. It took me a while to figure out that there was an earthquake, you know. And so many times I'm not up to date on news. So there could be like 10 other tragedies in the world that I've missed. You know, we're not at war. I mean, well, we are, right? Isn't that funny that we think that way? But there's a huge war still going on that's been going for since 2003, and we're still in it. That's 15 years ago, right? But then there's people that deal with that front line every day. One of the big things about the 9/11 thing that was so shocking is that happened in front of us, but there's people who have buildings get blown up in front of them on a regular basis. But, you know, we prayed for heart issues, and I know that there's a lot of family strife, and it's really, it's real. Some of these things are real. Obviously, the big things that I mentioned, but some of those smaller things or things we deem as smaller definitely have impact, and they're definitely real. When I was preparing, it was funny because I was thinking about boot camp. You know, like we go to boot camp. Some of you guys know I was in the Marines, so they send you down to San Diego, or if you're in eastern U.S., you go to Paris Island. And one of the things you do is you go into this hallway and you sit on this new bag of clothes, and you have none of your original clothes, and they just keep you there all night. They first of all take you down there in the middle of the night, and you just stay up there all night. And, you know, that's periodic when you're going to be in the middle of your night, and you're going to go for this long walk, maybe like 15 miles or so, a little minor exercise, maybe some push-ups along the way, maybe different things. And then at the end of that, they have this big little mountain, and big little, how's that? And we go to get to climb that. And it's just this feeling of like, can this continue? How is this going to go on? When is the break? When is it going to get manageable? And then you realize if you're in boot camp, especially in the Marine Corps, what are you training for? War. This is all practice. This isn't even the real thing. Once you get done with that, you graduate it, and yahoo, off to war. If you have your Bible, go ahead and we've been going through the book of Mark. If you want to go to Mark chapter 12. Just to kind of give you a quick recap, is we've been going through this for almost a year now, and we're getting toward the end. One of the major themes that's gone all the way through the book of Mark is, do you recognize that Jesus is standing right in front of you? He tells the guy last week that you're not far from the kingdom, and I can't help but wonder if he means like 2 feet standing right in front of you, right? And so our big challenge in life, I think, is very similar, is do we recognize Jesus in our midst? We're going to start at verse 38. And remember, the scribes, and they've been peppering him and pestering him and annoying him and challenging him on his religion, while all the while they're plotting his death behind the scenes. And Jesus says, as he taught, look, he said, beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in fact in the market seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. They devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. They're on the one hand, they're completely robbing, raping, pillaging, and saying, oh, how great our God is. They will receive the greater condemnation. And he sat down opposite the treasury, and he watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. And many rich people put in large sums. Poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, truly, I tell you, this poor woman, this poor widow, has put more in all of those who are contributing into the treasury, for all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had to live on. Jesus says, beware of the exploiters. Beware of the people who talk one way and do another thing. Beware of these people. And then he focuses and he puts the attention on this lady. And I'm struck. I know we spoke about her a little bit last week, but I'm just in awe of her piety. The fact that she goes beyond all of that crap and goes straight to the heart of the issue, which is her gift that she gave. She gives all that she has left. And I wonder about her. I wonder if she's one of the widows whose house was devoured. She must know a secret. I was thinking about in the sense of the Wizard of Oz. Anybody remember the Wizard of Oz? Is that current for everybody? Or is it just like me? So one of the cool things about the Wizard of Oz is it's the first time where we introduced color, right? So the movie starts out in black and white in Kansas, and then they get to Oz, and what happens? Color. Everything is bright and shiny. And then the one of the punchlines in it is you've got this great and powerful, mighty Oz, right? And what's going on behind the scenes here? Just a little man. So I was thinking about this, but I was thinking about it more inverted, right? You've got this little lady right here. You've got this little Jesus. But there's this great, big, huge, cosmic battle in play. Turn over to Job with me. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. Job chapter 1. There's a few places where you could read in Scripture, but this is great just to kind of get an idea of what is going on behind the scenes. There once was a man, in verse 1, chapter 1, Job. It's page 751 of mine. We were having that joke in Sunday school today. So it's kind of in the middle. Go left just a little bit. 420 in some years. So anyway, chapter 1, verse 1. There was once a man in the land of Uz, not Oz, whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, for he, one who feared God and turned away from evil. And there were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters, and 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, and very many servants, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. His sons used to go and hold feasts in one another's houses in turn, and they would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the feast days had run their course, Job would send and sanctify them. And he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." And this is the way, this is what Job always did. He covers their sin even if he doesn't know that they've sinned. He goes the extra mile and then some to make sure that all of his household is taken care of. But then behind the scenes, behind the curtain, in verse 6, one day the heavenly beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From going to and fro from around the earth and walking up and down on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not put a fence around him and his house and all he has on every side? You've blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But stretch out your hand now and touch all that he has, and he will curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "I'll take that bet." "Very well. All that he has is yours, is in your power. Only do not stretch out your hand against him." So Satan went out from him in the presence of the Lord. He only loves you because you take care of him. You give him good things. Every time he prays, you meet him. Worship is awesome. Everything he does. In fact, he's got this perfect life. He is Mr. Orange County. He's got the perfect car, the perfect wife, all the kids, everything you happen to need or want. Of course he loves you. He's got the little license plate, right, that says, "Trust God," you know, right there on his Maserati or whatever, right? Or Lamborghini or whatever. Of course he loves you. Where are we at? Verse 13. One day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine, and the eldest brother came to the house, the messenger came to Job and said to them, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys were feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans fell on them and carried them off and killed the servants with the edge of the sword. I alone escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another came and said, "The Thank you. Formed 3 columns, made a raid on the camels and carried them off and killed the servants and the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was still speaking, another came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came across the desert and struck the 4 corners of the house and fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head, and he fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came into from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrongdoing. One day the heavenly beings came to the presence to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them and presented himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answered the Lord, "From going to and fro on the earth and walking up and down on it and wrecking people's lives." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For no one like him on earth. There is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. He still persists in his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him for no reason." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Skin for skin, all that people have, they will give to save their own lives. But stretch out your hand and now touch him and his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "I will take that bet." "Very well. He is in your power. Only spare his life." And he goes on and he gives him, well, we'll just finish that chapter or that past part right there. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and inflicted loathsome sores on Job, and from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Job took a potsherd with which to scrape himself and sat among the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still persist in your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as any foolish woman would speak. Shall we receive the good at the hand of the God and not receive the bad?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. And then, of course, we know he gets on. And he's got friends that come, and they don't make it better. They make it worse. He's got his community, but they just sort of heap on more shame and more, "It's got to be your fault," and they try and figure all that out. But Job, so far in this, has been very clear that what he has is of a direct result from what God has given him. We want to be used by God, but only when it makes us feel good, doesn't it? Only when things are going well. Only when we get our cookies. And I know that for most of us in here, our cookies aren't in the form of a Maserati. We get other cookies. We get other things that make us feel better about serving and giving ourselves to the Lord. But when it is spit in our face or thrown back at us, or when there's oppression that comes on, do we take this posture? And we got to know that there is a cosmic battle that's going on behind us, right? So you think you're fighting with your spouse, but think again. There is something way bigger happening in the middle of that conflict. We have our struggles with each other and all these different things, and there's, you know, we have to walk those out. We have to deal with them, but there's something way bigger in play. And we need to invoke the name of the Lord to help us and to work it through and to join us in that fight. Your spouse is not your enemy. And there is more going on here that meets the eye. You want to go back over to Mark 13. This is what this is all about, this passage. Starting in verse 1, Mark 13. So he's still at the temple, and he came out of the temple, and one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and large buildings." And you just can think of just majestic church buildings, huge stones. They weren't even finished with it, but it's still starting to take on just strength and power and beauty and glory and grandeur. "Look, teacher, what large stones and large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." And when he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us when this will be. What will be the sign that all things will be accomplished?" And then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. And when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and there will be famines. But this is the beginning of the birth pains." Essentially what he's saying in this passage here is stay the course. Be clear. Life is going to get harder. You think it's hard now. This is just boot camp. We are actually involved in a war. And we are going to prepare and be prepared to go to war. Stay on your calling. God has called you to things. Don't let things move you off of that. Distractions. I think of this lady, like finances or exploits or troubles, temple corruption, and even, yeah, like the things that happen in these boot camp type moments. Don't let it move us. These are just distractions. The fight with your wife, the fight with your spouse, kids, all of these things. Stay the course. What has God called you and me to walk out? Thinking of the widow, she says, I know what the real investment is. There's no easy way out. For widows, prostitution was a huge deal, right? You're going to starve. You've got some tools, so go ahead and use them. She would appear, or apparently maybe chose not to do that. It would appear that maybe she chose not to be bitter. She chose maybe that she wouldn't be vindictive. Her house is devoured. She is crushed. And yet, what does she do? She doubles down on her piety. She doubles down on her investment and says, I don't have anything else to give, but I'll give this. A little bit of pocket lint. A couple shiny coins. They might not even be shiny. Probably not. Stay the course. It's all distraction. But she's in the background, isn't she? In the front ground is coming up is Jesus' death. Jesus is preparing these guys to face trouble like they have never known. You think these guys arguing with me all the time is a problem? Wait till you get to what's coming next. Mark 13:9. As for yourselves, beware. They will hand you over to councils, and you will be beaten in synagogues, and you will stand before governors and kings because of me as a testimony to them. And the good news must first be proclaimed to all the nations. And when they bring you to trial and hand you over, do not worry beforehand about what you will say, but whatever is given you at the time, for it is not you who speak, but the Holy Spirit. It's going to get worse. Brother will betray brother, death to death, and father his child, and children will rise up against parents and have them put to death, and you will be hated by all because of my name. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. Got to remember, this book was written 40 years after the death of Christ, maybe as far as 60 years. If you know Jewish history, you know that this whole region, that this temple thing about getting it crushed actually happened. Romans went in there and these beautiful, strong, majestic stones, they pulled out pins and whatever else, and some of it was just crushed to death, just pancaked. The temple did not, this temple is no longer in existence. It's gone. These people are getting arrested, the people that are reading this. Mark writes to remind them, this is what Jesus said to us back there. Don't you remember that this thing has fallen apart and these guys are getting arrested and killed? They're being lit up in Nero's garden as garden lights. They stick them on poles, put stuff on them, and light them on fire for his garden lights. We know that they've gone to the Colosseums and put animal clothes on them, right? And they send them out to the lions so that the lions come and eat them. And they have to fight. And they do it for their pleasure, just because they were Christians. Some would say that Nero used the Christians as scapegoats because he had a little issue going on with his own problems, that there was a fire that he was blamed for, and so he needed somebody to kind of divert the attention to. This happens in politics even right now, doesn't it? Exactly, and creating another problem to divert from, right? Jesus says, beware. He says, testify and trust, because it's going to get ugly. He's getting them ready for the cross and beyond. People are in real pain. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. Endure. What you're going through right now, whatever that thing is, endure. Endure, endure, endure. I don't have the background in some ways to say, hey, I've gone through all these terrible things, because some people are going through stuff that I can't even fathom or imagine. But I still know that God says, endure, and you will be saved. Mark 14. Let's try that again. Mark chapter 13, verse 14. Endure. Even when you're trying to speak, endure. But when you see this desolating sacrilege set up where it ought not to be, and you guys remember in the book of Daniel, there's the fight between the Egyptian, the Ptolemies, and I'm not going to say their names right, but the Seleucids? Somebody? Seleucids, thank you. But basically Egypt and Greek and all these people are fighting. Well, in the middle of that fight is Jerusalem. And Jerusalem has their temple, and they have their things, what they're doing. But these guys come in, and they desecrate the temple. They set up all kinds of abominations. This is so minor. We're talking like compared to what I'm talking about. But I'm standing out here and I'm watching a dog come up sniffing around the cross. And I'm just like coming unglued. You're not going to let that guy pee on that cross, right? Like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, he didn't, and it was fine and stuff. But I'm just like, you know, that would be offensive, right? Well, what they're talking about is much more offensive, even more so. They would sacrifice a pig. As you guys know, Jewish customs, you are not even supposed to touch unclean animals, and especially pigs. So to sacrifice a pig on the altar of God is just, it's worse than a dog peeing on the cross. Then those in Judea must flee to the mountains. The one on the housetop must not go down or enter the house or take anything away. The one in the field must not turn back to get a coat. Woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing infants in those days. Pray that it may not be winter, for in those days there will be suffering, such as not been from the beginning of creation that God created until now. No, and never will be. And if the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would be saved. But for the sake of the elect, whom he chose, he cut short those days. And if anyone says to you at that time, look, here is the Messiah, or look, there he is, do not believe it. False messiahs and false prophets will appear and produce signs and omens to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. But be alert. I have already told you all of these things. Do you hear a theme going? Endure. Be alert. Be on your guard. Pay attention. Don't get distracted by all the stuff over here. Focus. And there's an urgency here, especially in this part here. There's an urgency. There is stuff that we are to be about. We get on our little thing when we start, oh, well, I have to take care of my family. My first job as a minister is to make sure my family is cared for. Right? Our kids are watching us. That becomes a weird circle. Where in the Bible does Jesus do ministry to the disciples firsthand? He takes them with him while he goes and does ministry over here, and it says, oh, by the way, you go feed them. You go out there and spread the gospel, sends the 70. And then they get to come back. And every now and again, remember, this is just in the beginning here, just a few select get to be in with him to hear the explanation of what's going on. Gets to, you know, the behind the scenes type of moments. We get distracted. We leave God's calling because we think we're doing something for, you know, whether it be our families or whatever we're trying to do. And we have these weird excuses to do these things. We make stuff up. And it's the ministry that God has called us to do that we want to stay the course on. Not because, and that's the thing too, right? When it gets hard, we double down on piety. I think of like, well, I'm going to go to another church, right? Well, maybe let's look at why you want to leave first. Because maybe you're supposed to be pressing in. Maybe you're supposed to be pressing in. And that doesn't mean you can't leave. That's not like you're in a gang here and we're going to jump you out, right? But we have elders. We're walking together as a family. We want to do this together. And we want you to go and experience the calling that God has put on your life. We want to pray for you. I'll never forget when Rock Harbor started. This church got to be a part of that celebration. And Adam stood up here and he said, pray to see if the Lord would call you to go to Rock Harbor and help support them. And we lost a couple really valuable, key, amazing people, Eric Chandler to be one of them. And they went, and they went a part of that. It's not about that you have to stay or not stay. It's about that we do this together, we do some listening, and maybe, just maybe, you're leaving because life is a little bit hard, and we want to push through that. So you don't go to another church with a limp and wreck them. Right? Does that make sense? We are all in this together. But there's an urgency, and sometimes the disruption pushes us and creates drama. It just does. The drama is not bad. Okay? Consider, we were talking a little bit about this today, just the apathy. What if apathy is a spiritual attack? Are we, bless you.
God bless you, we don't have a power to bless
you. I get to do it out of my office. Bless you. But sometimes we sit back and we're aloof. You know, I think of that little statement that says, look busy, Jesus is coming, right? We just kind of shuffle papers. We're to be about what he has called us to do. That's the point. There's an urgency, and we are not to be distracted. Verse 24. But in those days after suffering, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heaven will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds with great power and glory. Then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven. There's a whole thing we could do here on the day of the Lord. I mean, this whole passage, we could break this. We could probably spend a year on this section alone, okay? So I realize that I'm moving broadly in this part here. But I want to just stop for a second and say the day of the Lord is coming, and it's not going to be good. We think that the day of the Lord is going to be great, and there will be some elements of it where God gets his glory and gets his due. But it's going to be tragic and sorrowful and painful, and it's going to wreck lives. People who chose not to listen, and I get there was a choice there, but they are going to be burned and wrecked because God's fury is way bigger than any of us could ever withstand. We think that we're having a tough time walking and following him now. Just try not walking with him and stand in that day. Think of the rapture. I'm out of here, right? It's not a game. There are people dying. And they will die if somebody doesn't convince them. Now, does that mean we're going to convince everybody? Of course not. Does that mean that we've got to go out and create this weird sort of panic rush to get out here? No, that's exactly the point. We're not to panic. We're to pray. Seek the Lord. What am I up to? Who do you want me to talk to, God? And if it scares the snot out of you, that's probably the person to talk to. I was thinking when I was in boot camp, we go through these little drills, right, where you get the gas mask and they put this fake gas going on and you learn how to, you know, make so you don't breathe in deadly poisons, right? Well, in Iraq, there was a war that you guys know about. The first one, this is Desert Storm. And in the midst of that, we all had to go through and get retrained because they had these Scud missiles and these gases and all that stuff. And some of you guys know that people have been sick from being their time over and during the Desert Storm, the Gulf War. And so we're sitting in there going through these tests, and I'll tell you, it was very different that second time around. We're on our way to go to deadly gas. This is no longer boot camp and this little make-believe pretend gas coming in. We were thinking in a way different way. And they were trying to get us to be battle-tested and battle-ready so that we could go. We worked on jets, A-6s. Some of you guys know this. We had about half of our airplanes were not mission-capable. So we're getting ready to go to war, and we have half the airplanes that we need to have. We were not battle-tested. And I wonder how much of us living in Orange County and our nice little happy place is battle ready. You know, a lot of us were running around during that little time period where, man, war, you know, this is before we were actually in wars, you know, we were in the kind of a peacetime, and like, what do you mean we got to go to war? I'm in the Marines, right? Remember? I'm in the Marines. And we're like, we're here for the college money. Nobody told us we had to go to war, right? Are we mission capable? Are we seaworthy? Can God use us? Verse 28, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that the summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. He says to us, for us to endure, but let's get clear on who's doing the enduring. Who's holding us steady? Who's got this thing? I want to share a song with you, if I may. Whenever Rick is ready. Not that song.
Strikes and the wind comes.
But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his slaves in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to keep watch. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight or at the cockcrow or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. Jesus is getting them ready. Ready, but not ready. They flee. Many, many people leave the faith throughout history. When life gets hard, the divorce rate for losing a child is 70%. We're not ready, but we're ready. You want to turn over to Hebrews chapter 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and the sin that clings so closely. And let us run with perseverance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, for our sake, for the sake of the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, discarding its shame, and has taken his seat at the right hand of God. Consider him who endured such hostility against himself from sinners, so that you may not grow weary or lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. You are ready, but not ready. We're going to walk through Lent. It starts on Ash Wednesday. We're going to meet at the DeGels house. They've opened their house, and it's supposed to rain, so we're going to figure this out. We're going to work it through together. We're going to endure. We're also going to do a corporate fast. We're going to invite you, for the first week especially, to not do any media, to put away social media, put away your music, to put away your televisions, to put away your YouTube videos, etc., etc., and to seek the Lord. Let him get you ready. What is it that hinders you and me? Now, I know some of you guys do have social media and stuff that you have to do with work, so it's up to you. If you're doing it for work, that's between you and the Lord. Nobody's watching you. There's no big brother in this situation. I mean, you know, the Lord is the only one that sees your heart. The whole point of this is for you to get to know him, to be close, to endure with him, and let him bring that stuff up. You want to know where your entitlement issues are? This is a good place to start. Where are the places that you run and numb yourself from having to deal with things? The cool thing about doing a corporate fast is that we get to do it together. That when you are struggling, that you can call somebody, that you can pray for one another. In fact, if you're struggling, you might even consider, yeah, you could pray for yourself, but consider who you can pray for. Somebody else might be struggling. But we'll get to walk this out together. And some of you guys, I know, don't care about media, and that's fine, and that's great. So maybe you want to give up something else. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I would encourage you, again, pray through this week. Maybe the Lord will give you something that you would give up instead. Maybe it is food. I think diet is a challenge for some of us. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what it would be. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's tobacco. Maybe it's, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's coffee. Yeah, coffee. Sorry, I said it. How do you say that? Yeah, I said that out loud.
Yes.
Yeah, I said that out loud. The theme of our Lent is lead me to the cross. We've done these kind of things in the past, and they've been really awesome to see how the Lord meets us and how he walks through us with us. And we're going to struggle, and we are going to fail, and that's okay. It's not about the failure. It's about finding the Lord in the midst of it all and somehow pulling this through together. So we're going to work through that. We're going to go through the theme, lead me to the cross. We really do need devotionals. I know that it's you don't have elders calling you this year. Last year we had all the elders and staff calling people. So I really encourage you to pray about, like, how would you contribute to the devotional in the lines of lead me to the cross? What does that look like? Or if it's related to the fast or encouraging your brothers and sisters to walk through. Miranda's going to help compile. We'll get an email out on maybe some of the specifics on that. You might have it from last year. If you want to write and you're ready to go, talk to us today, because we need to get a couple. How we're going to do that part of the Lent season is we're going to release it online. We're just going to do like a blog. Okay? So you say, oh, wait, that's media. It's your choice, right? Is it devotions that you're doing? Or are you using it as an excuse to do other things? Is it work-related, or are you doing an excuse to do other things? Right? So we talked a little bit about whether it be books and stuff like that. I'm going to let you kind of decide some of those things, but we're calling it a media fast, and you can work out the specifics with the Lord on that, on what it would be that you would give up. What is it that, if you find that you go to that novel, then that would probably count, right? And I mean that novel to sort of hide and get away. I know my son's going to be doing, he doesn't know about this, he's going to be very upset. But yeah, the PlayStation, we already ran into that on Saturday. But he was reading a book, and it was for school. So, we're not here to be like a heavy and oppressive and, the big brother type thing. But you know when you feel like you're like, maybe I should put this down, or maybe I'll at least procrastinate. By the way, I learned something cool. If you procrastinate sin, it's actually good. Like if you got that little, you might not need to sin later. So just procrastinate. We all have that gift of procrastination. So anyway, is that pretty clear on what we're going to do? Is that, yes, sir. We don't have flyers. The directions, what they're going to have, it's going to be on the website, the address, but I'll let Paul give it to us again now.
So the address, if you're ready for it, is 3108 Dublin Street, Costa Mesa. So 3108 Dublin.
It'll be on, there'll be an email that goes out on Tuesday. And just so you know, location-wise, it's literally right behind the Target. I don't know orientation-wise, over here, right? Over here, that way. So it's right behind the Target. So if you get close, you can call or whatever. But the email will go out with the directions. The time is going to be, what did we decide? 6:30. 6:30 is our time. Yes, ma'am.
When does the fast start?
It'll start on Ash Wednesday. So from... not in the morning necessarily, whenever you get the ashes. Some of you guys do or still practice going to the Catholic Church, and that's awesome, or the Episcopal or wherever. So it technically starts when you get the ashes, okay? So that's one of the cool things. It's kind of a bummer because we have a nighttime service, but one of the cool things is we get to kind of like go around and see all the people that are like brothers and sisters, getting their little heads tattooed or whatever you call it. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we may add some things to it as we go, But the main thing that you would add is what you feel like the Lord might reveal to you in that first week. Say what now? For the first week is what we decided. And then we might extend that, and it might be more individualistic as we go, but we want to do it at least all together for the first week, the media fast. Does that make sense? So now a couple things to know and just how we've practiced it is you get Sundays off. So that's kind of cool. So if you're if you do end up missing, you know, your news, your weekly news stuff that you kind of whatever, or you know, I'm sure you know maybe you get Ian will be you know, we'll probably play our place. Baseball game on the PlayStation or something like that, you know. So just know that Sundays you get to kind of that's the day to celebrate, and we're not coming with the sad face. We're celebrating for the Lord on that. Yeah. Any other questions on that? Yes, ma'am.
I know that you said music,
and
that does that include worship?
Yeah. So if it's background, I would say it's again it's between you and the Lord, right? In that sense, but I say if it's background, probably yes. If you're actually worshiping, then of course, right? I don't know. I mean, I do have a guitar and I make some noise, but it really is more distracting. If you just push play, it helps for me. So, Cool. Is that good? So we're going to meet on Wednesday and we'll go through it and we'll see what the Lord does. And like I started to say is the Lord has met us in just a lot of cool ways. And we're in a season where we want to grow up. We say that we want to, until we all is our theme. Until we all become mature, until we all grow up in the faith. And that's what we're about. All right? So if you have questions, thoughts, concerns, any concerns, feel free to talk to me, elders, anybody like that. Because, again, this is not intended to be, I don't want to make this something it's not. Right? So walk it out together. Again, I don't want someone to kind of go off into the corner and be all angry and bitter about something. Right? I want it to be out in the open so we can all encounter it and work it through together. Yes, but appropriately to right people. Awesome. So we're going to work on it. We'll be battle tested. We'll find out what we got. All right? So if you want to stand up, I'll bless us. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May you know his endurance in your life and through your situations. May you trust his redemption. If all else fails, bet on the resurrection. In Jesus' name, amen. Go in grace.